This is White Scar's Team Up. With no further ado, part two of our interview with New Century voice actress Theo Lee.
What is your approach when you're providing lines for an incidental character? Like, for example, someone like Private Trent at the shooting range at the beginning of Steamheart, or Florence at the Diamond Bell, or Mrs. Williams at Abigail's old family homes. These characters who are unlikely to appear beyond their one scene. Does their background, mindset, and general identity beyond what we see of them in the story come into play for you?
Well, see, Alex usually gives me like a paragraph primer on these little one-shot characters. It's like, this person is an apple farmer and she's turning into a Wendigo. That, incidentally, was the first time I ever recorded professionally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the first time I recorded for New Century, was the apple farmer.
Wow, okay. So
slowly turning into a Wendigo.
I've since learned that this is a common occurrence. Alex will often start a new voice actor with something small to get them used to the process, as is happening with one actor in particular for the upcoming Stone Spring Maidens. Also, here I make reference to a conversation that Theo and I had prior to the actual recording session, in case people suddenly get confused over a bit they didn't hear. So when you were talking about him coming back to you again and again for Wendigo noises, that was
the start of it.
Wow. Okay.
And I was living at home at that point, and I say at home with my parents, and they were luckily out of the house when I was recording this. Otherwise, I didn't tell them I was doing anything.
Wow.
And I didn't tell them I was recording stuff. And so I shut my door and I started making strange noises into a microphone for a man on the internet.
God, honey, what are you doing in there? I'm recording porn, lots and lots of porn.
Oh my God, he's killing you.
Oh no.
Yeah, but back to the original question. Yeah, so we don't really need a lot of background information. Like, I didn't need to know the apple farmer's backstory and motivations. I just needed to know she's in distress, then she's growling, and then nothing. So, yeah, it's like, for the incidental characters, I don't get much, but you don't really need much. It's like, this waiter she sounds sprightly and polite. Cool, I can do that.
So there wasn't necessarily any occasion where Alex would ask for another take on it because he didn't feel that you got it, or there was just not as critical a, you needed to be this exactly, or how did that come into play?
Occasionally I'll re-record a line if I mispronounce a word. Give it.
You did it again!
I know. Oh my God. Okay.
Hashtag team give it.
Yeah, if I mispronounce a word, or if I get a rhythm wrong, or he wants something to sound a different way, but not so much character as execution.
Okay. Toby, question 9. This is when you first actually put this on the list. I don't think I realized that Yagana was voiced by two people.
Me neither. It was when I was scrolling through all the various episodes and the cast mentioned, I saw that Yagana was voiced by you and Sharon. And I was wondering what the process of that was like. Did you discuss the Yagana's character with Sharon beforehand? And what was Alex's direction on how their voice should sound apart from Rao's narration in the book?
He wanted Yagana to sound uniquely otherworldly and eldritch. Like, she didn't really belong in any world. Like, what natural order did she come from? Because it shouldn't sound familiar at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me sort of speculating. I don't know where Yagana came from in story. But yeah, I had to basically empty my lungs for one line because it was just all breath. He would layer the voices, me and Sharon, together to create something that doesn't sound like one person, but could be one person.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm having this vision of all the various cast members of New Century being given these forms of which of the 10 worlds do you come from? And there's all these boxes for people to tick. And there's even an option at the bottom which says other. Yagana comes up, makes a mark on it, and it's outside all of the boxes. And, it's yeah. just, and it just says next to it, no.
I was a little bit leery about bringing this question to the fore, but it's such a significant thing that I can't not ask to delve a little bit into it if you can. You mentioned that Truth Arlington was the easiest character to get into. I suspect I know the answer, but who was the most difficult?
And does their name rhyme with pose?
I'm sorry, I had a brain fart. Who are you referring to?
Sorry.
Rose McClellan.
Oh, Rose. Oh, jeez. Rose.
Yeah.
It's very understandable to have blanked
somehow,
that part.
Somehow I put her in a box and forgot about her.
Threw that box into a lake.
I'll put that flea in a box, and then I'll put that box inside of another box, and then I'll mail that box to myself. And when it arrives, I'll smash it with a hammer.
Wow, yes. Oh, jeez. Rose McClellan. She's the Dolores Umbridge of my repertoire. She's just a vile person. And it was playing a villain sometimes is fun. Like, you know, you get to be something you're not. It's like the polar opposite of what you are. But, geez, Rose. There were times I'd stop myself in the middle of recording and say, geez, Alex, this line. She's just such a... She reduces people to numbers. And that's the root of human evil. And see, that's the thing. She's not a monster. Monsters are not human. She's a human being, and she's capable and willing to perpetrate this vile philosophy and lifestyle on other people, whether they want to or not. Yeah, she was definitely the most difficult to get into. Even the way she spoke... Truth has a very precise way of speaking, but Rose is like a razor. Just everything is sharp and edged, and she'll cut you with her words just as easily as a knife.
Yeah, the significance... I went through a lot of character lists, and one of the things that I found in short order is that while... Alex will often call upon some of the more nuanced villains or antagonists. He'll get Matt. And by Matt, I mean to clarify Matt Wardle of the New Century and Magnificent Seven, as opposed to Matt Ramsey, frequent guest on the various iterations of School of Movies, as well as periodic guest voice for New Century. Or he'll get Spencer to voice some of the characters, such as Hawkeye in Tiger's Eye, or Balthus in Princess Thieves and Christmas Thieves. Any of the darkest characters, he almost always reserves for himself, but the McClellan Patriarch, he outsourced to someone whose name I'm not even familiar with. Sorry again, I know his name, Jacob Newbern, I just don't remember his name coming up prior to Steamheart. And in the case of Rose, obviously he couldn't do that himself. So how was the choice made to have you take up that voice? And how did you manage it?
Oh, he asked me way before that point if I would be willing to play a villain, antagonist. I know he doesn't really like the word villain. I said, yeah, sure, sounds fun. I didn't know.
Sweet summer child.
I should have taken into account who was asking the question. But it was definitely an interesting experience having to say certain words that I would never utter in real life. Like, I won't even initialize them here, but you know what they are.
Yeah. No, I'm not necessarily looking forward to diving too deep into that. Unfortunately, as you mentioned a moment ago, you can put Rose in a box and throw it into the sea and never open it again. Toby and I have the role of being Johann Krieger and have to open many boxes, so we'll talk about that eventually, but
Well, just me going, oh, this is a good box. There's tigers in it. Oh, this is a good box. It's England. Oh, this box. Yeah, we had a glimpse. It's enough. It's enough. Let's go.
This box is filled with racism. We don't want that.
Who would make a box like this?
Why do we even have that lever?
Ew, it's sticky and it smells.
Oh. It would.
Yeah, jeez.
All right, going back to nicer topics. Which characters are you most excited for the various people that you have played to meet and play off of in the future? I know you've gone into this question a little bit in the roundtables, but given that they are harder to find or have been removed from the docket altogether, I feel like this is a decent question to get back into for people that either never heard the roundtables or now never can.
I'm really looking forward to playing Glenn again. Glenn, where does that come from? Glenn, the frog from Chrono Trigger. Cool. Gwen. Gwendolyn. Oh, geez. Okay. Really looking forward to playing Gwen again.
Oh, no.
We've broken her. It's too late.
Oh, no. Okay. But yeah, there's a new character coming up that I'm really looking forward to as well. I won't spoil you.
Okay. Can you... No, I was about to ask if it's from Stone Spring Maidens or Panther Soul, but no, that's... Well...
Oh, both of those, yeah.
Oh, both? Okay, well, actually...
Yeah. There's two characters. Let me amend that. There's two characters coming up that I'm looking forward to.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it should be, like, as part of the Magnificent Seven, it makes sense that you would likely have potential characters, small and large, in all of the upcoming books and everything. But if there's going to be specific, exciting team-ups, then that's just something for all of us to look forward to, even us who don't have a clue about any of those. You didn't happen to hear the wild speculation episode that we did on all of the Phase 2 stuff, did you?
I don't think I've gotten to that one yet.
All right, fair enough. But moving swiftly along. So you got new characters coming up in Stone Spring Maidens and Panther Soul. You're excited to get back in the driver's seat for Gwen. But are there characters that you specifically have voiced that you're interested in having a conversation with yourself as Alex does so often, or is it primarily characters that other people have voiced that you're most interested in?
Oh, a conversation between Gwen and Truth.
Oh, goodness.
Simply because Truth is just so no-nonsense, and Gwen is, she's beauty, she's grace, she'll punch you in the face kind of person.
Yes.
And I think Truth would start losing her patience, but in that quiet way that people like her do. That would be a lot of
screaming.
Fun. I'm sorry, what did you just say there, Toby?
Internally screaming.
Oh, okay, yeah. Does that line just come from, like, when you say she's beauty and she's grace, the thing I think of immediately is Miss Congeniality,
which is where that comes from.
Okay, great. Because
and then it was sort of memed into I think it was a Miss America comic, or whoever. Not Miss America, but America something. It's I'm really terrible. Hispanic America themed, like her name is America. I think she's DC.
No. You're thinking of America Chavez, the
Latino
superhero from Marvel. Yes, I love her. I think I knew
yeah,
that.
And one of her captions that occasionally circles the internet is like her coming with like a flying punch to somebody. She's beauty, she's grace, she'll punch you in the face.
Oh, okay. I already love that line then. Yeah, Miss Congeniality is one of those... I won't say it's a dirty little secret or anything like that. I just like Sandra Bullock in general.
She's great.
The sequel wasn't as good, but seeing her play off of Michael Caine was just one of the most brilliant things that I've ever seen. And
there's the dynamic. There's the dynamic right there, with Truth being Michael Caine. And Gwen being just, I'm not taking anything seriously.
I have gel in my hair. I haven't slept all night. I'm starved and I'm armed. Don't mess with me.
What? No armored car?
Now I'm just thinking of you doing a Michael Caine impression, but blending that with the truth voice, and just inexplicably, the next book she told the truth is suddenly talking like Michael Caine.
Master Wayne.
No, now we're getting okay. This isn't even Dana Carvey's impression of George Bush becoming a parody of itself. This is just weird. The whole thing, Miss United States, is the what's it called? The
theme song for the pageant.
Yeah, and Miss America is the actual one. So yeah, that's what memes do, is they combine with other things in weird ways, and that's how you get things like Doreen Green having her own version of the Spider-Man theme song, and you have America Chavez punching people in the face to a parody of the Miss America song. So it's brilliant. I love it. I love it all.
I don't know why I wanted to call her America Cabrera. I've been watching too much DuckTales. Thank you.
That was a completely weird mashup. Like, I don't even know how DuckTales even enters into that entire...
Fenton Crackshell's middle name is Cabrera.
Oh!
He's Latino in the reboot.
I don't think I realized that. Wow, okay. Wait, hold on a second. Fenton Crackshell is the one that plays Gizmo Duck?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. For a second there, I was mixing up him and what's it called? The civilian identity of Darkwing Duck. So
that's Drake Mallard.
Drake Mallard. Yes. Okay.
My head is full of useless information.
My head is full of useless information, too. It's just different useless information. I think that's part of being a geek, is having a head full of useless information. And it just pops out randomly.
I can't do it on command.
He can't do it on command.
All right. Toby, take us to question 12.
You have never had to narrate most of a story by yourself. Even your first major role was shared narrating duties with the rest of the cast. Would you ever want to try doing that? Maybe not with Gwendolyn, but with a different character?
Maybe. It would depend on the story. And it would depend on the character. Truth might get a little, I hate to say this about my baby, but stale after a while because she's so straight-laced. Mm-hmm. Gwen might be funny to narrate an entire story because she would have her own things to say. It would be like a Terry Pratchett novel.
Mm.
Yeah, I can say that. Part of me was curious if you would be reluctant because...
I would be initially reluctant because that is a lot of work.
Not just a lot of work, but I don't know the full story behind this, but after what happened with Maureen, it feels almost like that might be a potential risk. Alex has his own medical issues, but his voice is not one of them. Mm-hmm. And given that you're not a trained voice actor, as you say, it might be potentially daunting. But I at least was curious if it was something, it was an idea that you would get behind.
I'd be game. Mm. I'd be game for it. I'm just, it, like I said, it would depend on what it was.
You know, we'd have to conspire it into a very particular situation, but I think Amanda would make quite a good narrator.
Huh. Well, it's not impossible. We already know that there are alternate worlds that happen differently from how specifically Centrum ended up as a result of being the hub world for all of the rest of the worlds. After the way Let Them Go ended, it's not impossible that there could be something further with Amanda. And my thought actually was if
she could narrate an entire book as the Wendigo.
But there is a book called Wendigos, and if you're the go-to person for Wendigo noises, to wonder to myself if you're going to be one of the Wendigo protagonists.
Job security.
Well, you got to find someone else who knows what a Wendigo is.
I'm just trying to visualize like the cadence of a narration, but growling as a Wendigo, just
always look like they got a headache.
But if we use that clip, it sounds like the Wendigo are stupid and not dangerous. So it would be more like Izzard describing a velociraptor.
Is this your casa? Do you realize how fast you were going? Very busy. I realize you're very busy, but there's rules. Could you show me your license? Fuck, it's a raptor.
Sorry.
Just a Wendigo in like a red smoking jacket sitting down in front of a fire and putting on some spectacles and going, chapter one.
That is very Gravity Falls, and I love it.
Honestly, the thing that I was going for was the smart gremlin in Gremlins 2. We want what you want, civilization. Like this over here. Bang. Now, was that civilized? No, definitely not. Fun, but in no way civilized. School of Movies just had a Gremlins 2 show, which means that reference is uncannily timely, and I'd take credit for it if I hadn't forgotten this bit existed. Yeah, obviously, when you listen to that episode, you're going to hear our many thoughts about the potential ways in which Wendigos is going to go, but we're not going to try and pry any information from you out of that. If you have any information...
I haven't heard about... I know the title, and that's as far as I go on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Toby, 13.
Okay, lucky number. Are you happy with whatever roles Alex decides you're right for, or is there a particular kind of character archetype or role that you'd especially want to stretch your wings with, apart from the ones you've already given life to?
Alex has a pretty good feel of who can do what and who shouldn't be doing what, you know? So I think he's hit the nail on the head pretty well so far. I can't think of, like, a particular thing I'd want to do. Maybe some more comedic stuff, where that can slot in.
I mean, that is definitely the thing that you enjoyed the most as playing Gwendolyn, as being the Guardians of the Galaxy of New Century. Mm-hmm. And if you have a character coming up in Panther Soul, the story of Rama is already going to be fraught with enough difficulty as... the confrontation between the various tribes of the New World, so to speak, and the Cats of Albion. But it also sounds like, from some of the things Alex has said, that it's going to be more of a fun jaunt than the original Tiger's Eye was, which dealt with a lot more heavy themes. So that might be your first opportunity to do more comedy?
Maybe. I'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not generally the remit of Through the Windor to be talking about a whole lot of current events going on, but given the way that the last 4 years in particular have shaped New Century as Alex has written it, it's hard to not get into it from time to time, especially as the pandemic has resonance with the Wendigo plague and civil unrest and all that sort of thing. So with that as the prologue to the question, Alex has talked about how New Century has changed as the world has changed around him. As someone that is an ascended fan and now multiple voices of the world, has what New Century meant to you changed as well, particularly given the tumult of the last 20 years? I mean, the last 4 years.
It has been a long decade this year.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it has changed so much as it has become one of the certainties, if that makes any sense. It's weird to say that a piece of, you know, ephemeral fiction has become an anchor, but it has. Because everything's chaos these days. Everything's just weird and crazy and kind of scary. And somehow New Century has become, it's like, okay, well, I can lose myself in this podcast for a little while. And even as I became a part of it, it's like, well, I have this to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
I have these incredible friends that I've made through the podcast. And I have this new aspect of myself that I've discovered because of this podcast. And it is a definite positive in my life, especially these days when everything outside my door is chaos and confusion.
One of the things I'm curious about, because I'm not sure that it was ever made explicitly clear, it sounds like, at the very least through the bloopers, that whenever you're recording bits, either people are doing it by themselves, and then Alex is coming back with commentary for re-record or future stuff, or in some cases, he's actually there with you as per the gibbet thing. Has there ever been an occasion where you're recording lines and someone else, like, that you're potentially having an in-story conversation with is there for it and reading off their lines? Or is it primarily either a solo or you and Alex procedure?
It's primarily solo and with Alex. I haven't had, like, a joint thing with another voice actor yet. I have a feeling we just goof off. So if teacher's not in the room, the students are going to misbehave.
Yeah,
it's like mostly I'll record lines, and I do a line two or three times in various different ways so that Alex can pick and choose, which is a trick I learned by watching the commentary off Lord of the Rings, where Ian Holm talked about how he would deliver a line or a scene in several different ways so the director could choose which one fit best.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of was like, oh, that makes sense, and I just started doing it.
Oh, I see.
Personal story to share at this time. When it was this week, lost Ian Holm. That
hit hard. Oh, yeah. I hadn't even... Yeah, okay.
Getting back to... Yeah, getting back on track. Yeah, it's something that I find just when it's all together, it all feels seamless and that it works off each other so well. So when you're recording your lines, do you have the full text in front of you so you know what the other characters are saying and doing, so you kind of create the appropriate tone to respond to them?
Yeah, Alex sort of chops up the script so where I have what my lines are, but I also have what the person is reacting to, so that, you know, I read what's going on around the part, but I don't usually get the whole shebang.
Which character, like, we've talked about a number of the characters you've played up till now, which character would say most represents you with no filters up, the most primal, the most vulnerable?
I think the closest would be Lucy.
Really?
Even if I'm not as good at bridging with other people as she is, I'm very empathetic. I'm very sensitive to other people's moods. And I'm trying to learn how to get a handle on that so that it can be very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an introvert, so that does help. Can't imagine the disaster I'd be if I were an extrovert.
Sharon could say a whole lot more about this. My experience with being an introvert, but also being what would be termed in Myers-Briggs as an INFP, the same as Amanda Culver, is that as someone who also has a great deal of empathy, my natural desire is to heal the hurt of others, even sometimes at the cost of my own well-being. And there is definitely sympathy involved in there, but there's also a protective response, I would say, that if it's too difficult for me to bear both my pain and their pain, I often know that I can't necessarily deal with my own pain. Therefore, trying to help someone else is as much protecting me as it is protecting someone else. So if that provides any personal insight at all, that's the thing that I bring to it. Toby, you're more of an introvert yourself, yes?
It's this odd thing where I always would say, yep, yeah, I'm an introvert, but there are moments where I sort of dally with the other side and I feel like I'm someone who, depending on the company, will fit. It seems like, oh, well, I guess I can be this other thing that I didn't think I was.
You're an ambivert.
An ambivert, yeah. I like that term, yeah, but it's something which I think it's a bizarre thing that the grass is always greener. I suppose that if I'm in a very busy social situation, I'll think, oh God, I need to be by myself right now. I need to be there. I can enjoy my company there. It'll help me reset. I'll be all right. And then if I'm by myself for multiple days at a time as I'm getting on my own work and my own research, I'll become my worst enemy and I'll listen to myself voice all my worst fears. And I think, oh God, I've got to be around someone right now because I'm just talking to myself and that guy's an asshole. No, it's the original question of what character most represents you and then filters up. I think that Lucy is such a brilliant answer for that because Lucy is someone who is not necessarily someone who, despite how much support she brings to other people, she doesn't have all of the answers and she doesn't know all of the solutions, but she keeps on trying. And I think that her speech in the chapter where Abigail's sister is saying that everything's too much, the world's too broken, the response there has, I've mentioned this in other episodes, has been something I return to a lot, that I think this is when things are feeling too overwhelming, this is a small thing that I can do right in front of me. And I guess one thing is to thank you for the way you delivered that particular speech and how that has meant a lot to me as each time I revisit it. But the other thing is just that if anyone listening to this out there has those moments where you feel like, you know, I think I'm an introvert and a lot of people look at me and that's what they see, but I also have this desire to be an extrovert, don't worry, you can be both. You can be whatever you need in that particular moment, and that's a-okay. And if this show is something that's a bit of fun and you want to be introverts or extroverts together, then hey, just come on, speak on, we're all friends here.
And honestly, that makes a lot of sense too, that Lucy ends up being the answer, dovetailing a little bit on with what Toby said, because truth is very self-assured. Having Thomas Arlington, having her father as a foil, means that she had to become very confident in the way she presented her case and the way that she fought for it. And Gwen, with her being in a position of high privilege and gaining additional strength on top of that, being a brawler, those are two different kinds of power fantasy. Being Lucy Weatherfield is not a power fantasy. It makes sense that that's who you come home to in an answer to that question.
As much as I would want to say I want to be Gwen, she and I are different people. No, I love her very much, but I don't have the extroversion and the willingness to wade into a fight, the gleefulness.
I think
it looks like fun, though.
Yeah.
Looks like fun. That's why I play violent video games.
Yeah, I'm with you there on that. I am not a very violent person, and I need the cathartic release that a violent video game will provide sometimes. So,
I mean, it's a line I often say is that sometimes you just wish you could hammer that renegade button.
Now, I didn't write this down because, and I'll obviously completely edit this out if I'm remembering incorrectly. Theo, I feel like it wasn't on a podcast, rather, it wasn't on a roundtable. But you might have come out recently as Ace. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, it's not recent, though. I just tend to be repeatedly vocal about it.
Okay.
That's a part of the queer experience, is you're constantly coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is. It do be like that.
I think I must have saw you post something about that, I want to say, last year around Pride Month or somewhere in between, because it was definitely a revelation at the time, particularly when I was taking into account Alex's somewhat after-the-fact decision to make Corral Ace as a part of the ongoing Steamheart narrative. That then makes me ask, if your experience is something that Alex has borrowed on in order to inform any parts of New Century, and if that's going to potentially be a thing at all for Stone Spring Maidens, because that's the one, Autumn is the place that he keeps referring to as being a far more LGBTQ friendly utopia.
Yeah, and you have no idea.
Oh, goody goody gumdrops.
Oh,
Rubs hands in anticipation.
Yeah, he has asked me on occasion, you know, it's like about aspects of the ACE experience, and I've done my best to answer questions, given that I'm only one person, and asexuality is, you know, we're not a monolith like any other aspect of the queer community. Alex has been really good about representing the queer characters. Like, I forget his, the two guys' names.
Jeremy and, Donald. Jeremy and Donald, yes.
Yeah, those, yeah. That they're just two guys, and they're doing their jobs, and they're just going through their lives, and that's what queer folk are. We're just trying to exist, and we're not, you know, all glitter and sequins and rainbow themed clothing all the time. That's just for pride. That's just for fun. And we're just regular people. We're just trying to go through our day. Alex has been, like I said, he's been really good about representing that sort of everyday. And just presenting them as people first, and oh yeah, there's this other thing about them, and it's just how they are. It's just observation. It's just paying attention and being willing to step outside yourself.
I think I've alluded to it. I'm more than happy to say right now, particularly it's appropriate since we're recording this during Pride Month, I'm bi. I'm making no bones about that now. It took me a very long time to accept that, because I didn't think that I was attracted enough to men to count. And I've learned since then that that's a huge part of bi men's experience. It's been a thing for Alex recently, so I'm waving my flag high right here. I'm with you, and I'm looking forward to a lot more of the gayness in New Century, because fuck, yes, please, give it to me. I'm already hugely excited that when Alex decided on the new bunch of commissions that would help pay for their new awesome TV, that She-Ra Princesses of Power was going to be on that roster, so... Toby is with me on that. Toby has been live tweeting about Princess of Power.
What are you talking about? Anyone who's seen my Twitter knows that I've been doing nothing of the sort.
The good news is that the She-Ra podcast was excellent. The bad news is that the TV situation was one frustrating bit after another, and now mostly has been resolved.
God, just nothing but tears and happiness and little rainbows floating around my house are watching the finale. Ugh.
Yeah, and in the meantime, when you mentioned that I was right on with my suppositions for Stone Spring Maidens, I was doing that thing with Scorpio's claws up to her chin and little sparkles in her eyes going, oh my goodness, yes.
Oh, it gonna be gay.
And we have a trailer quote.
Shit, yes, writing that down now.
It gonna be gay, Theo.
And then the reviews was, it was. 5 stars.
Well, we are coming up a little bit on our end date here, but that's fine because we have one major question left. Toby, bring us home.
All right, so if you could guarantee one of your characters makes it through to the end of New Century alive and gets a happy ending, who would it be, and what would you like their ending to be?
Oh, easy answer would be Gwen and Robin, because, and I don't know if Lyra wants this broadcasted to the world, but she has written this little fanfic about Gwen and Robin's child.
My
little heart just burst into a million tiny pieces when I heard that, because that is the most flattering thing that I could have ever heard.
Yeah,
that someone was moved by my performance, at least, you know, mine and the stories, enough to write next gen fanfic.
I mean, that's just, as I recall from the roundtable, Princess Thieves is Lyra's favorite story, And it was such that at one point, Alex did the thing from Princess Bride, where he did the horrible ending where Gwen marries Count What's-His-Face. I don't even know. I don't even think he was a count now. But
Lord Farquaad.
Lord Farquaad, yes. Where he tries to play it off like that's the ending, and Lyra has a complete Fred Savage reaction.
Jesus, Grandpa, what did you read me this thing for?
Goodness. I will definitely ask Alex if it's okay to have that in there, because that's a great little detail. I do like that.
Well,
but
eventually this is all going to be like Lyra's series anyway, so that fanfic can be canon.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. And hearing that mentioned, it makes me think immediately of... Theo, did you ever play the Uncharted games?
I have not, mainly because I have not been rich in consoles.
So they're Uncharted territory.
Yes, yes, thank you. Never met a British person who could resist a bad pun.
Hey, we share the roles of doing bad puns around here. Me and Toby, we pass around the hat.
Like I could talk with my perchetois.
There isn't a through line specifically between Nathan Drake and Elena Fisher and Gwen and Robin, because that in that story, Elena is more the serious grounding force. And in the relationship between Robin and Gwen, the serious grounding force are the two side characters, Viola and Oberon. The two of them are really just sort of doing their own thing. The relationship between Nathan and Elena was the through line for Uncharted. And so therefore, their relationship in the final story of Nathan Drake was particularly important. And one of the best epilogues ever is their daughter going around while they're on this great little beach house, and she's discovering all of her adventurer father's old things, and suddenly asking questions about, what the hell were you into? I thought you were doing, you know, just boring archaeological stuff. And the two of them, the wife and husband, look at each other. He's like, okay, we're old enough now to have this conversation. She's like, what? Is this about sex? I'm like, no.
I thought you were Dr. Jones, and all of a sudden you're Indiana.
Yeah, I know that Uncharted is a huge favorite in the Shaw household, which makes me wonder if that partly influenced Lyra, but that's definitely Lyra's story, so we'll leave it to one side. You said the easiest answer to the question is Gwen, but it sounds like it's possible there may be characters you have yet to voice that you might have additional opinions about.
Yeah, the two upcoming characters, I want them to have happy endings. Badly, because it involves other characters who I like. And that's all I'm going to say.
All right, that's fine.
Who are we shipping Truth with now?
Oh, you're not close. I mean, I would like Truth to survive. Let's be real, but...
Yeah. I mean, she has a position where she's not throwing herself headlong into danger, so chances are high. But she's also already been through a lot, and if I have one desire for Stone Spring Maidens, the centerpiece of it would appear to be the confrontation between White and Harry, with the addition of this other woman in green, whose role we don't know yet, but who we suspect is from Autumn. But I'm hoping that when they're referring to Stone Spring Maidens, that Truth plays a role in that, because I feel like particularly with the loss of her parents and the fact that they didn't really get a chance to delve into a whole lot of that in either Uncivil Outlaw or Steamheart, that Alex will take a moment to focus on that relationship between two sisters. I'd like to see them team up. I'd like to think that Truth is also a Stone Spring Maiden in her own way. If it's a name that has thematic weight as well as, what's the word, diegetic weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Truth is definitely made of Stone Spring.
Mm-hmm.
At her very core, she's she's got a bedrock of her own self-assuredness. And, you know, it might be fun to have a romantic interest, but I think it wouldn't be too off the mark to say that she's ace as well.
Interesting.
Well, if Alex were to say that about her, it wouldn't surprise me.
It's the sort of thing where it doesn't, a lot of the time you don't even want it to, it doesn't need to be anything romantic, but it would just be great to see as more characters are introduced and we spend more time with the characters we already know, that just to have her have someone she can talk to as a friend, because a lot of the people around at the moment aren't particularly close, and that's kind of a tough place to be in.
Yeah, having someone around that she can just sort of let her hair down around and not have to be this, you know, business face. Business, numbers. Am I doing this right?
Yes.
It took me a second there.
I love being around people that I can say stuff like that and they get it.
Don't worry, I'm a human, quote, autofill machine, so, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you're quicker on the uptake than I am. I tend to need to prepare these things.
I have no idea why I'm someone who takes time to formulate his thoughts, get words into shape, and just all the general stuff of dyspraxia. And then as soon as I hear, oh, that quote from that thing I like, my brain just
squirrel
speeds into full gear and goes, yep, that's the answer to it. I recall there was once, like in school, a last day of term thing where everyone's like either putting on movies or just putting together like fun activities. And one of them was just a history quiz. And in the last round, there was this one question, and we all had buzzers and things. And the history teacher just said, nobody expects. And I slammed my hand down and said, the Spanish Inquisition. The people who didn't know had no idea what was going on. They thought that I like had just heard two words and somehow knew the answer.
Fetch the comfy chair. God, it's been a long time since I watched Monty Python.
As far as business goes, this all seems like appropriate business.
Yeah, we're waiting for the Vincent Adultman in New Century.
God, I don't. The only way I think that could come into play is if
Mr. White.
Well, I was going to say if the Nag makes a reference. He's going to say, just call me Bojack Horseman. I don't know. Anyway, Theo, thank you very much for coming on with us. Lady Zatanna, Homo Magi, you are welcome back on anytime possibly when we finally get to Princess Thieves, or even if you just simply want to, because, you know, to a certain extent, our normal episodes can be very serious and dry, and we try and cut some humor in order to bring us away from difficult topics sometimes. Things like this, our White Scarves team up, is one of the few opportunities we have to just completely let our geek flags fly, and we love it. So we would accept any excuse to, oh, we came up with a new bunch of questions to have you back on again. Thank you so much.
No problem. This is fun.
Talking with you has certainly been medicine for the soul. It's been a delight.
Thank you.
Do you have a spell to take us out of this world and back into our own?
Oh, obviously. Okay.
And for all of you listeners, we'll see you next time on Through the Windor with more on Secret Rooms or another White Scarves team up. Playing us out this time is a different female songwriter, Lissy. I originally debated whether this song worked better for Abigail or Gwendolyn, but the simple truth of the matter is that the singer here talks about someone that supports her in her rebellion, but James and Annie are more stabilizing influences, and Robin is a co-conspirator. I imagine Gwen might be singing this herself if she was a modern woman. It's one of my favorite pieces ever, and when the bridge comes to its climax, I just want to roll down the windows of my car and belt it. I give you Cuckoo.
I walked alone, I never tried to stay in line. I didn't know what I was doing half the time. I didn't know that my life would ever change. I didn't think that anybody felt the same way. And then you came.
Have a spell to take us out of this world and back into our own?
Cake, please, Varla.
Well played.
The rest of the story outside Princess Thieves is very serious business. Mm. And everything in the... I'm sorry. Siri just came on.
Oh.
Sorry.
You said serious business. And sorry, Siri's like, what, business? Business?
Wasn't talking to you.
You too.
Yeah, I've got to take Kiki to the dog park or she might eat me.
You got Wendigos too?
No, don't talk about the dog park. Do not talk to the hooded figures in the dog park.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Well, I said the words and now she's looking at me. I'm too smart.
Oh, it gon' be gay. Sorry, I need to write these things down, otherwise I'm totally going to forget them.
Oh, wait, that's going to be like the quote we use as the teaser for this episode, right? Yay, good.
All right.
That's G-O-N apostrophe.
I have a good ear for these things.
You're done?
Not yet.
How about now?
Almost. And there.
Let's do this.